Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Rex Pickett is the author of the novel Sideways, the multiple award-winning Alexander Payne film of the same title. Sideways captured over 350 critics and awards organization plaudits, including two Golden Gloves, an Academy Award for Best Adapted Screenplay, the prestigious Writers Guild Award, six Indie Spirit Awards, and the list goes on. Rex has written and directed two independent feature films, California Without End and From Hollywood to Deadwood. He wrote the 2000 Academy Award-winning Best Live Action Short, My Mother Dreams, The Satan's Disciples in New York. His Sideways sequel, Vertigo, won the Gold Medal for Fiction from the independent publisher Book Awards in 2012. His Sideways 3, Chili, forms the final leg of the trilogy. In 2012, Rex adapted his novel into Sideways, The Play. He staged four record-breaking runs, first at Ruskin Group Theater in Santa Monica, where it ran for 6 months, then the La Jolla Playhouse, where it broke all attendance records for a non-musical in their 35-year history, with three-time Tony Award winner Des Mikhanov directing. In 2017, in collaboration with composer Anthony Adams, Rex turned his attention to the musical version of Sideways. 2 years later, the book for the musical is finished. Half the songs are composed and recorded with a three-time Tony Award-winning musical theater director to be announced soon has come on board. There is every likelihood that the workshop or premiere production will happen in the later part of 2020. Rex grew up in Southern California from the University of California at San Diego, UCSD. He was a special projects major specializing in literary and film criticism and creating writing, a member of the Writers Guild of America, the Dramatics Guild, and now ASCAP, ASCAP. Rex has enjoyed success in long-form fiction, screenwriting, independent films, and now stage. The Rex Pickett papers are now enshrined at his alma mater, UCSD, and Geisel Libraries, Special Collections, and Archives. Rex's new novel, The Archivist, will be published on December of 2019 by Blackstone Publishing. Please welcome screenwriter, novelist, playwright, and film producer, Rex Pickett, to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, Rex.
Hi, Ray. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. That's a mouthful.
I know. Even I was surprised.
Well, you traveled a lot recently, too. What is going on in your life right now?
Well, right now, a number of things are going on. First of all, of course, the musical, as you brought up, we have 12 of the 20 songs. And a musical, you know, taking it to Broadway is a real journey. But, you know, we just brought on board a three-time Tony Award-winning director, and we're in negotiations, and we're bringing on other people. We brought on Julian Reeve, who was the music supervisor of the national tour of Hamilton. So we're excited about that. And, you know, but it's finding funding and taking it all the way. There's my Sideways wine just came out from Chile, and that, we didn't know what that was going to be. economic side about it. And there's also sideways the non-musical, which as you, you know, pointed out, was done at La Jolla Playhouse on the campus of my alma mater, with Def Mackin' Up, and it's now gonna go again in fact they're in auditions right now to open in New York, the end of January, so I'm excited about that. And then of course, big is in, you know, the novel world, The Archivist, which will come out actually in 2020, in spring of 2020 now, from Blackstone Publishing, which, you know, I've worked 3 years on that book. It's very, very different. And, gosh, when I signed a deal to write my memoir, My Life on Spec, so with a Canadian publisher. So I wake up every day with a lot to do. I mean, I'm not overwhelmed, Ray. Honestly, it's a good problem to have all these different projects and things. The musical is, you know, I wrote the libretto, or sometimes known as the book. It's based on my play, so that's done. So I'm really mostly producing that. The play, the non-musical, of course, that's already done. I only have to show up for rehearsals. You know, so it's, you know, some of it, you know, is not really, you know, I'm just kind of overseeing some of it too. You know, and the wine is just fun. I show up and, you know, sign wine bottles. I just got back from the 15-year anniversary of the release of the movie in the San Ynez Valley where the movie was shot, Sideways. It's about 50 miles north of Santa Barbara. Oh, my gosh. I mean, think about this, right? I just stayed 3 nights in the Sideways Inn. I mean, the Sideways Inn, it used to be built in the movie, it's the window inn. It's now the Sideways Inn. I mean, it has gone away.
Wow.
You know, yeah.
That's incredible. Man, what was I going to say? I just lost it there for a second. Anyway, the wine, is that available here in the States?
Yes, it is. It's Total Beverage Solutions is the importer, and
okay.
Yes, Market, a huge distributor, is you know, and they, you know, they're kind of a store to store, you know, restaurant to restaurant.
Right.
However, just the other day, I talked with WineAccess.com, and they're the largest online retailer of wine. And if they bring on the wine, and they're tasting it today, actually, I feel pretty confident they will. It's a Pinot Noir, but it's under $20. And not to go off into wine too much, but there are very few Pinot Noirs under $20, and this really over-delivers for the price. So if WineAccess.com takes it, it will be available online. So you can just sit at home, Ray, and you can just order wine.
Awesome.
Same way you do toothpaste from Amazon.
Well, you know, wine is huge here in Florida. I mean, everybody drinks wine. We got wine tasting everywhere. You know, my whole family drinks wine. It is also my favorite wine. I know you destroyed the Merlot community at one time.
Well, I get asked that question a lot. And let's correct this on Merlot. Merlot, before Sideways came out, was 20% of the red wine market.
Right.
20%. And what had happened is in the early 90s, 60 Minutes did a segment called The French Paradox. And it was basically eat fatty foods, drink red wine, and you'll live forever. It was a completely flawed and ridiculous, you know, study. However, what it did was in the early 90s, people rushed out to their wine stores and liquor stores to buy red wine so they could live forever. And they were initially drinking Cabernet Sauvignon, which for neophytic palates can be, you know, sometimes a little astringent, tannic or whatever. And they gravitated to Merlot because it's fruitier, it's more approachable, it's more drinkable.
Yeah.
And thus was born the Merlot craze. Merlot became, in the 90s, the vitamin E, of the United States, basically, you know. And so by the time I wrote the novel, of course, when I write the famous line that Paul Giamatti, you know, says, I don't know it's going to be a movie, Ray. I don't know that even when it was optioned to be a movie, I don't know. I didn't do the adaptation. I don't know that they're going to use that line, you know. So it's funny people say you destroyed it. I mean, it is true at that moment in time, Merlot had become synonymous with a $5 plonk. So, and I think what Sideways did a number of things for the wine industry. First of all, it made wine tasting and going to wine country hip. I mean, the San Ynez Valley right now, I mean, it's crazy. It hasn't really changed in some ways. You know, it's still very beautiful. But boy, within 2 hours out of gridlock traffic in you're drinking wine. I mean, it did do that. It also made people take wine a little more seriously too, because Miles he's just a middle class guy, but he takes his wine seriously. So, you know, and I think a lot of people said, no, I don't want to just order, you know, I call it $2 upchuck, mm-hmm. but, you know, $2 chuck. That's what people were ordering. They were just being cheap. And, you know, it's just fermented grape juice. Oh, there's a lot going on in there.
Yeah.
And I rhapsodized about it. And I find something poetic in wine. It doesn't exist in beer. And it doesn't exist. You know, there is an elitism and a snobism, too, that I try to, you know, overcome. That's why when I put my name on a bottle, a Red Ticket Signature Series, I wouldn't do it for some $40, $50, $60 Pinot Noir. I don't want to put my name on something like that. And I've been asked to do it. So this is an under $20 wine from Chile, from the country of Chile. But I think it also, you know, so people realized that there was more going on in the glass. Merlot had been overcropped. But the two winners here is the people who were making great Merlot. They didn't like the fact that there was a lot of cheap Merlot flooding the market.
Right, right.
So the cheap Merlot left. They left town.
Mm-hmm.
And the great Merlot makers like Schaefer and Duckhorn and others in Napa, they remained standing. They loved me. And, of course, Pinot Noir, oh, my God, that was 1% of the red wine market rate. It's now almost 10. It's almost 10%. Well, you can't grow it everywhere like Merlot. Merlot should be cropped in a lot of different places. So Pinot, you know, now I'm sounding like Miles, Paul Giamatti in the movie, but, you know, it is grown in certain, it has to be grown close to cold oceans and other places, and I won't worry with all the viticultural stuff. But, you know, of course, they were planting a lot of Pinot, but you can't, unlike Merlot, you can't overcrop it. You can't mechanize farm
right.
Pinot Noir. You can't. And so you now see it on restaurant menus, everything, but it all goes back and sideways. It took this little, I mean, you know, enophiles, they knew about Pinot Noir. They knew about Burgundy. Burgundy is, of course, a region in France where the red wine, by law, must be 100% Pinot Noir. So Burgundy is a region, not a grape, but it made people really, you know, fall in love with it, like the character Miles did. So it's, you know, that's the real Merlot story, if you want to know the truth,
yeah.
Is that they had cornered a part of the market because people just wanted a cheap red wine, and suddenly people said, you know, I'm gonna, there's more going on in this bottle here, and I'm gonna get to take wine a little more seriously or whatever, and thus was born, I would call it craze, but certainly the greater, much greater, wider appreciation of Pinot Noir. I mean, their business has increased 800% because of the movie. Think about it. The Pinot Noir makers, they love me.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Your face should be on every bottle. Are you kidding me?
Well, it's funny you said that. Yeah, I get asked all the time, right? You know, don't you get a royalty for this? You know, like, you wouldn't believe.
I should.
I wouldn't look at anyone because they're just leveraging, you know, and just being really good business people. I mean, you know, certainly Frank Ostini of Hitching Post, his place is just for 15 years since the movie came out. And a lot of people think 15 years, it feels like yesterday, but it has been 15 years. They don't really make films like that.
No, they don't.
Ray, that much, you know, character driven, you know, realistic, relatable characters. They're not superheroes. They don't necessarily win in the end. It feels believable and realistic. And I was up there for 3 days, and the fan base has just grown and grown and grown. And that area, I mean, Hitching Post, when I was, you know, going up there in the 90s and I'm literally doing my research, you could walk in there midweek and there'd be nobody at the bar.
Right.
Now, I mean, try getting a reservation on the weekend. It hasn't gone away. 15 years later, it's not just because they keep going up and wanting to experience the locations in the movie. It's just a beautiful place. It's a great place to get away from.
Right, right.
Within 2 hours, you're out of L.A. And you know, and it's still relatively inexpensive. That's what I discovered, because when I was going up there, you know, I was dead broke. When I wrote Sideways, I was, you know, in a state of near destitution. I found for a couple hundred dollars, I could just go up there and play golf at this great golf course that was inexpensive and uncrowded. The whole place was uncrowded. It was undiscovered. And not anymore, of course.
Right.
And, the other project I got going, my gosh, we're going to do Shea Miles. There are so many tasting rooms open, so I have some business partners, and we want to open the ultimate tasting room Clubhouse that would also be kind of like I could pull from my archive manuscript pages with original marginalia, you know, memorabilia from the film, stuff that wouldn't be in other stuff, and just make it like, I don't know, I guess I hate to say this at the risk of immodesty, sort of a shrine or a museum, but very much alive. You know, I'll do public appearances. It's something I would really love to do.
Yeah.
I love the recognition. It doesn't prevent me from writing and doing my other projects. And the fan base, I'm very generous in that way, Ray, in terms of giving back to my fans. I really answer every email that is sent to me through my website. I do as many personal appearances as I can and or here, you know, I'm talking to you about it. You know, I enjoy the recognition. I'm proud of the movie and I'm proud to, you know, to go to, you know, to continue to mine the material in the musical, in the non-musical. You know, I wish there would be a sequel movie. There's the number two question next to Marlowe. Mm-hmm. Why isn't there a sequel movie? And unfortunately, that's just the one rights I don't control. It could change.
Yeah.
You know, Disney bought Fox, and Fox made it sideways, so Disney's in the sequel business, so we'll see. But maybe in some ways it's good there hasn't been a sequel because it makes the pent-up demand for the musical.
Right.
And, you know, the play, it's another way you can experience
exactly.
this movie and these characters that you supposedly, I mean, I get it from people. I honestly, Ray, I live 15 years later, 20 years after I wrote the novel, I live it every day.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of...
They don't recognize me, but if I just drop the word sideways, it is amazing.
I
live it every day.
There's got to be a little bit of Miles in you, right?
Well, Miles is good. I mean, the novel, for all your listeners out there, the novel, which, you know, I wish I had $10 every time somebody said to me, I saw the movie, but I didn't read the novel. But, you know, the book is written in first person from the point of view of Miles. So you are going to Miles. That is me. Obviously, things are fictionalized. I look differently than Paul Giamatti, you know, so on and so forth. But it is, you know, I'm not the Jack character. Jack is based on a friend of mine, Roy Gibbons, and even the Jack character in the movie is not quite the Jack that I know, but it's still, I love the movie. The movie has done a lot for me, but yes, I am Miles. There's no question about it.
Did you have a hand in picking any of the actors in the movie?
Great question, Ray. They were actually, Alexander Payne, the director, and he wrote the script. He wrote it with partner Jim, but Alexander wrote the script. He, a number of times, threatened not to make the movie if he couldn't find his Miles. He really had somebody in mind, and they called me over to the casting offices in Hollywood at Hollywood Warner Studios, and we looked at a lot of tapes of people and stuff, and, you know, and I don't know, then I got a phone call from Alexander, and he said, I found our Miles, who is it? You know, Paul Giamatti, I'd never even heard of him. And I'm pretty big in the film and the film business. Mm-hmm. I know most of the players, but I'd never heard of him. And he was in a film called American Splendor, but it hadn't yet even been released. And he met him. And actually, what he didn't meet him in Hollywood. He had a New York casting director. He really scoured. He scoured, you know, the U.S. for his Miles. And when he had him, then that's how Payne, you know, saw Miles, you know. Anyway. I didn't really. They asked me my opinion, and I told them my opinion. But the end, Alexander Payne, he did the casting. It's not even his casting director. It was Alexander Payne.
Right, right. Yeah, he's a good actor. I remember him in a lot of shows, a lot of movies before Sideways.
Paul Giamatti. I mean, he's a little bit different than me, but you know, as a person in some ways. But the script is a little bit. Different. I'm a little bit more, and you'll see it in the play, and you'll see it in the musical too, is I'm willing to go to kind of more emotional, darker places, and then Payne kind of pulled back some, and maybe finds them a little melodramatic. I think in, for example, in the novel, Miles is not a school teacher, but in the movie, he is a school teacher.
Right.
So that kind of grounds him in a middle class reality that Paul Giamatti kind of fits as an everyman, whereas my Miles is more of a, he's a bit of a dissolute. He's more of a, you know, he's living on the edge. He's living paycheck to paycheck. So he steals money from his mom. Not that that's ever justified, ever. But in the novel, he's not even going to be able to go on the trip unless he pays his rent. So when Miles does it in the movie and he's got a job, like the original locations of the novel. He honored it. I mean, he is a 95% faithful adaptation of my novel. I couldn't be happier. Mm-hmm. But in a way, with the play and with the musical, I'm able to leapfrog backward to the novel because they have to be based on the novel for actually legal and creative reasons. And then take the real true material. So there's in the play, and we're doing it in New York with Peccadillo Theater in West 45th. So if you get a chance, you know, tell your listeners, fly on up.
Sure.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be a wine event. When we did the play, here's a quick anecdote, and I probably got off my, you know, there's added value in the play. Let me put it that way. There are things in the play that are not in the movie, but it's still very much sideways. When we did the play, the first time we did it, was just a lark, really. Otherwise, I wouldn't be sitting here talking about it. Was at the 50-seat Ruskin Group Theater in Santa Monica, of all places. And I lived in Santa Monica, so I said, sure, I'll do it. You know, it could be fun or whatever. And that's a long story, and I won't bore you with that. But I said, I'll only do it under one condition. This is sideways. This is about wine. We're going to pour high-end wine for free every night. And they looked at me like I was crazy. If you saw their lobby, and their lobby was just kind of one of those kind of equity waiver theater lobbies that, you know, people might know. You know, they had some cookies and some Heineken and some Yellowtail Merlot. Literally, that was their concessions, you know. So, with some connections, I won't bore you. With only three performances a night,
right.
I was able to get high-end winemakers from Sonoma, Santa Ynez Valley, and other places to pour, and I mean $50 to $100 a bottle, and I didn't want to charge the patrons at all. So for free, you could come there and drink high-end wine, three performances a week. It was supposed to be a limited engagement of 15. It ran 90 performances.
Wow.
I was there every night. It was a rush. People were drinking incredible Pinot Noir, and the winemakers donated because they it was almost like they were showing their appreciation for what the movie, you know, and you know, sideways at this point, you know, is a brand at this, you know, for them. It's so that was great. At LaHoya Playhouse, because of the ABC laws, we weren't able to pull it off, but we will in New York. We will be pulling it off, and when we do the musical, I mean, I'm almost demanding that, you know, I want it to be, you know, critically, you know, praised. Everybody wants that. But it's a wine event.
It's a wine event.
I was at the Shaw Festival in Ontario.
Yeah.
Niagara, Ontario. There's 120 wineries there.
Yeah.
But also, it was originally a theater destination. Yeah. You know, it's great, beautiful theaters there. You know, one is a 600-seat theater. But now there's 120 wineries and good ones. You could get a different winery to pour every night.
Yeah.
And it just goes with the musical or the play. It's an event. And that's what they're going to do in New York. It's going to be wine tasting. It's actually, ironically, it's in a church on West 45th. A church is apparently exempt from ABC laws because of, I guess you're taking communion or something, you know, Catholic church. Anyway.
You know, Rex, Jesus drank wine, not beer.
There you go, yeah. I don't know if beer was allowed back then. They actually just discovered the first, they think is the first winery, and it's from 6,000 years ago in Armenia. They found these casks, these clay casks, and sort of the first, rudimentary tools of fermenting grapes. I mean, fruit has been, fruit can ferment naturally.
Right.
You go back thousands of years and, monkeys would, get high on the fermented fruit. I Jesus did drink wine and why? Because he had taste. No, I mean beer, craft beers are good and different, but it's a very, very narrow range. First of all, they don't have vintage at all.
Right.
They're meant
to
be drunk fresh. I mean, with the exception of some, single malts. And they just have a very, very narrow range compared to wine. You realize there's over 1,300 identifiable grapes in the world.
Yeah.
1,300, and every year is different. And there's a poetry to it. And it was that poetry that is what alerted and enticed me into, it's a component of the novel. I mean, there's other things going on, midlife crisis and other stuff. But it's that poetry of that wine. There's something about it that that spoke to me. That you can it evokes Mm-hmm. I mean, really, when he really has the, he's clinging, of course, to this book being published. He's got one last publisher hanging on, and that was me. I had a novel I'd written, and, you know, I had a good agent and everything else, and I had all these rejection letters, and they were down to, like, the last one before he was going to, you know, quote-unquote, retire the manuscript.
Yeah.
So I was that guy, but, you know, I'm just throwing in everything in the kitchen sink when I'm writing sideways. Very real, very believable, and it made my agent loved it, some other people loved it, and then there were some people, you know, God bless her, my ex-wife told me to burn it. And,
really?
And she won an Oscar for a short film I wrote. She's mm-hmm. not chair of NYU Chiz School there, a graduate film. She didn't know in certain terms, she told me to burn it. And so did a couple of other people. You know, because it I really bared my soul, and it was very personal, and I'm willing to take those risks, Ray, as a writer. I'm just willing to take those risks.
Yeah, it's funny. Stephen King threw his away, and his wife got it out of the trash can.
Well, you know, the thing about Stephen King, I mean, he writes the kind of genre fiction, and I don't read it, but I know he's a terrific writer, and
yeah,
and he's just such a machine, you know, he just pours it out of bed, you know. He could probably write one every 6 months and afford to throw one away, you know.
But yeah. Yeah, he was in a seminar down here, and I saw him and talked to him. And he's got a house here in Sarasota, so he's kind of a local guy.
Well, he's just a true writer. I mean, that's the guy who just wakes up and puts his business stream and pours out. I mean, I'm not him, of course, but when I write, like with The Archivist, my new novel from Blackstone, it was originally written as a eight-episode miniseries, and I wrote out the entire, no one would ever do this. You would write the pilot mm-hmm. and then try to get money to write the rest. No, I wrote the whole thing. It's like 540 screenplay pages. And then I got an offer from Blackstone to write the novel. So imagine that I have adapted the novel I had written, if you can think about it. Now I get a chance to write the novel. So, you know, I thought about it, and, you know, I kind of let it build in my head. And when I sat down to write it, I wrote, in 90 days, I wrote 225,000 words.
Wow.
And as you know, being in the publishing world, that's big. I mean, that's a 600-page novel.
Yeah,
it's getting edited down now, and you know, and they want me to go through a little bit of it. And that's fine. You know, I mean, we live in a day of cognitive impatience, mm-hmm. you know, so, but it's really one of the, I had moved away from Miles and Jack. I want to go back to Miles again, but I've moved away from him. In this book, it's about, it has, the two main characters are women, so that's really new for me. It's about a young project archivist who comes down to San Diego, actually to a fictional university, but it's really the University of California, San Diego, to take over for on a project archiving the work of a very, very famous writer, and the previous archivist had died in a drowning. So through the course of, you know, the narrative, the project archivist who's there just to finish up the project discovers a treasure trove of love letters between her dead predecessor and the novelist. And so in essence, it really becomes, it starts out, you know, so it's like, and we go back in time now to that. So I go back to a novel nested within the main novel, and it's a love story, but it's a tragic love story. But then it slowly morphs into a murder mystery.
How'd you get the idea for this?
Well, honestly, my papers were taken.
Right.
And I, you know, by Geisel Library, which is Dr. Seuss, basically. And and it was an incredible honor for me, and I met my archivist. I didn't even know what they were going to do. I thought they were just going to, you know, I handed them over a bunch of boxes, and I thought they were just going to put my name on it, you know, pick it, throw them in a warehouse somewhere. I didn't know what archivists did. I really, no, they spent, I mean, my archivist spent 9 months, you know, pouring over my collection. She knows me better than I do, right?
That's true.
She read all this stuff, and it's all folded and beautifully organized,
right.
Finding aid and all this wonderful stuff. And of course, they found stuff in there that, you know, like, I remember she, when I met her, she said, "Who's Irv Tun?" I said, I blushed, you know, and I guess like when I was 20, I'd written a porno novel when that was my pseudonym. So they, all these things they knew about me, but, and so I started talking to her, and I thought it was really fascinating that, you know, what incredible, fascinating story. And so we came up with the idea, and she's very involved in this. And I would give her a co-credit on the novel. She doesn't want it. But, as I saw Project Archibus as being, so that's somebody who's kind of like a subcontractor who comes in for one job and is out, in and out. And they find things, in a lot of stuff goes out on servers, and they find stuff on these what's called the dark archive,
right,
or dark storage. And think of the stuff that's out there. There's so many stories in the archival world.
Mm-hmm.
And she's basically, if you want to know the truth, she's 27 years old,
right.
Emily Snow. She's basically a nothing short of a kind of an adult Nancy Drew.
Huh. That's pretty cool.
And so it really started with my papers being taken.
Yep.
And getting to know my archivist and hanging out with her, asking her questions.
Yep.
It's the same with Sideways. I didn't just sit down and write Sideways.
Mm-hmm.
After my second feature film, that you mentioned, it got released, but it didn't do well, and my marriage kind of went south and whatever, and I was broke, and other things were going on. My mother had a stroke, and my younger brother just died recently. God bless him, but he stole all her money, and that was terrible. I had to take over her care. So I was nowhere in the 90s, and I started just getting back into the game of golf. If you're, I'm a pretty good golfer.
Yeah.
And I playing in LA is a nightmare, so I started gravitating, migrating north, and I finally found this course, La Prisma, in the Santa Ynez Valley. So Sideways, the genesis is golf.
Mm-hmm.
It's not wine.
Right.
And then I started staying overnight at the Windmill Inn, which is now the Sideways Inn. And it was cheap. It was $29.99. I thought, wow, what's wrong with this place? And then I found out, oh, this is wine country. There's some tasting rooms. And you go to tasting rooms, and you can drink wine for free. I go, this is great. But now it's not free. It's a totally tiered system of, the regular tasting, the wine club member tasting. And now, my God, it just goes on and on. They're making so much money. So for me, it was a great getaway. And so these things begin. And then I started to bring friends up and you start to get to know this location. But as a writer, you're always working, you're always looking for that kind of material. And so to me, meeting my archivist and being in the Special Collection and Archives at Geisel Library and just seeing it and knowing San Diego as well as I do because I grew up down here and I went to UCSD, you start to feed off on that. But now you need a story, the story. And Sideways is I needed, Jack to be getting married, and then I needed conflict, and of course he falls in love with another woman. But that didn't really happen. But I did go up there with a friend of mine, like Jack, and we hung out, we laughed, and we went from tasting room to tasting room. But I knew the place, it's where the story gets fictional, and of course, the story with my archivist, there wasn't, the same love story or anything like that, But I did understand a lot about ethics. It's absolutely unethical for an archivist to have an affair with what is essentially a donor.
Right.
The famous writer that she has an affair with is, he's a donor. That's completely unethical. It's fireable.
Right.
Exactly. Even though it's not criminal, it's just fireable on the spot, because of possible, blackmail or whatever. So, her death is sort of suspicious, but it's also a great love story too. So you take real things in life. I rarely, other writers are different, but I write out of real things, things that I've lived, things that I'm feeling, places I've been. When I'm not in a place that's familiar to me, I'm uncomfortable, and I feel like I'm kind of making it up in a way out of thin air. I really, when it comes to characters, I like the characters to be people I know. I want to hear their voices in my head before I start writing, and knowing the locations, being in those locations. So that's how the archivist started. It was a long process. I mean, my papers were taken 7 years ago, and we're going to have a book next year. So sometimes it takes a long time.
How
to find that kind of verisimilitude, which is the ring of truth.
Rex, how difficult is it to take the archivist and turn it into a screenplay? Is that an easy process or a hard process?
Well, it was originally conceived as a novel. And then I thought, you know what, this is a mini-series. This could be a mini-series because it's so long.
Yeah,
you go
definitely.
Back in time. And I come from screenwriting, so for me, once I had the idea, it was actually relatively easy for me. Once I write very fast.
Right.
Because I won't write unless I have the characters, unless I have the trajectory. I don't map it out. I don't write it down, but it's in my head. And I always have the ending. I'm always writing to that ending. And once I go, I go. But then I got the chance to write the novel. And like I said, you know, I mean, there's been many, many passes since that 90-day drowning, as we say. You know, take, Nobel Prize winner, Kazuo Ishiguro. You know, The Remains of the Day is his legacy work. Man, won the Nobel Prize. The Remains of the Day, which was, of course, a great movie, you know, by Merchant Ivory, that was written in 30 days, the first draft. I mean, think about it. His legacy work, Nobel Prize, and he wrote it 30 days. And he literally wrote 11 hours a day. But bear in mind, he researched and built it up and built it up in his head. And once he went, you know, it just came. It's like it just comes pouring out. So I'm very different than these writers that write, you know, 200 words a day and go over it and over and over again. I mean, that's fine, because at the end, you know, at the end of the day, it's what's there. Take Sideways, for example, right? You know, it built up in my head. I originally wrote it as a screenplay, but it didn't work. In fact, it so didn't work, I didn't even show it to anybody. Then I was writing a short story in first person from the standpoint of a guy named Miles, and it was about a wine tasting that he goes to every week, which I was going to, so it's a real thing. And I'll never forget, I got to the end of the short story, and I don't even know why I was writing a short story. I mean, my agent wasn't interested in short stories. I just did. I just had the idea, but I got to the end of it, and I stood up from my desk, and I thought, oh my God, there's the prologue to the screenplay, but it's not a screenplay, it's a novel in first person from the standpoint of Miles, and I wrote it in 9 weeks. So that question I get asked a lot, how long did it take you to write Sideways? 9 weeks. But really, it began in the early 90s when I started going up to the Santa Ana Valley to play golf.
Right.
So it really started there, you know, but, you know, and then, of course, the screenplay didn't work, and so once, you know, all these elements build, so the archivist, you know, it's building in you, and you keep adding to it, and you're kind of drafting it, almost like an architect. It's working over drawings, you know, in your head. But then at some point, you know, you just have to do it. And so I would not be a person. It could take, you know, years to write something, but the actual writing out of a draft comes very fast for me.
Oh, that's great. You know, there's so many people that are binge watching television now because of the inventions of, say, Roku. You know, you don't have to go to your cable and wait every week. You can just watch show after show after show. Man, you should be part of that scene. You know, you should have a series out there.
Yeah, well, thank you. And, well, we pitched a couple things, and we still may. I mean,
right.
I've been pitching an idea called Going Sideways, which is a Bourdain-like show that I actually would host. It would take you all around the world to these various wine regions and talk to winemakers and whatever.
Right.
It's all moving into the home. It's moving away from theatrical. I grew up, of course, with theatrical.
Sure.
And it's kind of sad for me that, you know, that theaters have become largely just, you know,
right.
You know, Marvel Comics Universe kind of stuff. And, you know, Martin Scorsese wrote an incredible op-ed in the New York Times recently about basically the demise of film.
Mm-hmm.
And as we bring it into the home and as we get into digital, everything has changed because, you know, Netflix doesn't measure their success by box office. They measure it by how many subscriptions they have. And so it's now kind of quantity over quality.
Right.
So digital, the good news is, with digital filmmaking and all this streaming and all this content, is it's giving a lot more people a chance. But the bad news, Ray, by giving so many more people a chance, and I'm glad that it does, we're getting these, you go to Roku, you know, and it's like a fast flea market where you're looking for those few little nuggets of gold to make.
Right.
And we're just inundated with content and what they want. I mean, Disney Plus just started yesterday, and they've got a, you know, they've got a powerful universe. Of course, they bought Fox, but they've got, obviously, Star Wars, they've got MCU, Avengers, all those spinoffs, plus they've got, you know, Pixar and all their old animation, and we'll see how they do, but they're right now a huge war on for subscriptions. And, you know, and there's other ones coming up. Peacock, which is NBC Universal, they're going to start their own thing. Netflix is well known that if they had to rely on their own content that they've created, they would not be doing so well. They're making it on content that other people created. For example, entire seasons of Friends.
Yeah.
They've been leasing. When those leases run out, they could be in trouble. So I don't know. It's a good time in some ways. There's so much stuff and it comes into your home. But it's a bad time because I in some ways I think, you know, films were better, you know, back when. But
yeah.
This is where we are and nothing's going to change it. And I'm a little sad about literature too because, you know, right now the number one, you know, entertainment is of course streaming on demand. You know, it's over 120 billion. But you know what number two is? Video gaming. $40 billion.
Yep.
And I just don't, I'm sorry. I mean, that's fine. I'm not judgmental and I don't care. Whatever. But really? I mean, you're going to wake up at age 35 and say you play 50,000 hours of Fortnite, you know, when you could have been reading good books and you could have been, you know, nourishing your mind and learning things. You know, I mean, again, I don't want to be judgmental, but this is, you know, when I was coming of age in my 20s, I used to read 3, 4, 5 hours a day.
Right,
video games didn't even exist. Then the first arcades kind of came in. But they didn't really exist. It wasn't even and they're highly addictive. There's nothing nourishing about video gaming at all, but it is. But as a writer, we are competing against it. It's a $40 billion a year and growing business.
It is. Rex, how about Sideways, the game?
There you go, yeah. And you know what? It's funny you said that, Ray, because there are people, you know, have said we should have, you know, something like that or Sideways, you know, maybe a, you know, if we do this clubhouse up in, it's going to be called Shea Miles, but if we do the clubhouse up in the San Ynez Valley,
right.
One of the things that I would love to do this is they have this in London where they have these apps and you pay a certain amount of money and a famous actor or something will take you around the theater scene of the West End or take you around Tin Pan Alley where, you know, the Beatles, you know, first recorded or whatever. And they say, okay, now walk down this block and turn left and we'll wait 10 minutes. And then this voice comes on and narrates for you. So almost like, you know, like an audio, you know, tour of a museum
that
would take you around the San Ynez Valley and how, and it would be my story, would be in my voice too. So it's been broached, Ray. I'll let you put the hey, and by the way, I've never been to Florida.
You've never been to Florida? You're kidding me.
Hit up your connections or anyone who's listening to this.
Yep.
I'd love to come down there and do a signing of, you know, books and also my wine, you know, have a wine tasting and bring it down to Florida. I'm sure it's going to be there very soon because it's just now hitting. You know, I'd love to come down there and if you tell me that Florida, I know. I mean, I need to get down there soon because you're going to be underwater. You know, you're going to be Miami Beach is going to be the lost city of Atlanta soon, so I need to get down there and see it. Now,
well, California is usually on fire, so
that's right. Now we are. Yeah, it is. Well, you know, California's been on fire, you know, but the problem is that, you know, people keep moving out, you know, deep out into these wooded areas. I don't want to get on this political thing. And you know, God bless them. They want to live out in these wonderful rural areas, and then they want power brought to them out in these wonderful rural areas.
Yeah.
And that's a recipe for disaster. I mean, we did my play 2 years ago in Santa Rosa, and 2 weeks out in the house I was staying in was in a very wooded area. And I remember saying to the people there, aren't you concerned about fires here? And I'm sitting on their porch and this house is built entirely out of wood essentially in a eucalyptus forest. And, you know, they kind of looked at me or whatever. 2 weeks later, their house burned to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks after the play closed, the house I was staying in, they had 10 minutes to get out. It burned to the ground.
I know.
So, yeah, we're on fire. You're underwater. You know, the glaciers are melting, you know. Trying to figure out where to go here.
I tell you, Rex, Florida is huge on wine, though.
Really?
Yeah. Very big. Every store here stocks thousands of wines. They have every brand, every label, whatever. We've got lots of wine tasting here with big events. You would be perfect down here in Florida.
Ray, I'm sure you're connected down there.
I am.
Anyone there, you're welcome to email me. I'm just my name at Gmail, Rex Pickett at Gmail.
Okay.
You know, shut it up, and I'll come down. I'll tell sideways stories. I'll pour my sideways Pinot Noir from Chile, which is, you know, for $15 a bottle, really over-delivers, I think. So.
I got places for you to run your play, too. Exactly.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Okay, the non-musical is with Samuel French, so anyone can license it. And go and talk to the artistic directors of the theater. Of course, you know, and I'd love it. It's in the budget. I'd love to come down and work with the actors. I mean, you know, remember a lot of plays. You know, the authors are dead. You know, you still got a live author here. Mm-hmm. They're excited to have me come in New York because not only do you have a live author, but you know the play is personal. So you can ask me very personal questions. And I can, you know, help these actors. I mean, it's a real gift to them to be able to pick the brain of the person who wrote it. So, if you do it as a wine event, it'll be a huge success. I didn't know that Florida was that big into wine. I
hadn't
really thought about it, but if they are, it's going to be a natural, right?
So well, I've got the perfect venue for you.
Another career opportunity for you.
Well, I've got the perfect venue for you, and it's the same place. Guys, that, we were just talking about him. The scary guy. The writer.
Stephen King.
Yeah, Stephen King was there. He did the same thing that you're proposing for Sideways. And it was a smash. It was sold out, packed. He signed his books after the event, and he sold thousands of books at that night. I even bought one myself.
Wow. Yeah. So the theater?
Yeah, it's a brand new theater. I was involved in that theater, trying to raise money for it. And
get on the phone. How big is the theater? Would you say
it's pretty? It's a good size.
Really? Would you say over 300?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Oh, well, let's do it.
I'll hook you up. I'll send you.
We could do a limited engagement.
I'll send you all the information. Yep. And I'll talk to them. I'll talk to them for you if you want.
Put them in touch with me. You know, we're doing it in New York. They could come up to New York and even get a preview of what they would get in Florida.
I'll set it up for you. No problem.
Okay, thanks, Ray. Yeah.
You're a good guy. That's why I'm doing it.
Well,
I got a couple questions for you. The Sideways Fest. Did that happen?
I was telling you, I was up at the 15-year anniversary.
Okay, that's right.
Of Sideways, and it was a 3-day event.
It was
just 3-4 weeks ago. Oh, my God. And of course, this is a place I know so well. I mean, you talk about Lonely, Destitute Wreck going up there in the 90s. In midweek, I would go up on the weekend. Midweek, there was nobody there. I mean, you'd walk into the Hitchin
Post. Yeah, yeah.
They were happy to see you.
Right.
You go to a tasting room, get this, the tasting, and of course, there were very few wineries up there. The tasting rooms are open from 1 to 4. Now, they open at 9 in the morning, they go to 9 at night, and they have jazz bands. It's ridiculous.
That's wonderful.
Have you ever been there, Ray, to that area?
I have not, but I am planning a trip that I'd like to, me and my wife go to. It'd be a perfect place for us.
I don't want to then too many details, but like, there's a tiny little town, Los Olivos, where they shot the famous scene where Miles says, you know, they order Malo, I'm leaving. I'm not thinking, hey, fuck Malo, the big line. But it's a tiny town. It's like 2 blocks by 2 blocks. It's basically just where wealthy people, you know, come down out of the hills and just have these little, you know, stores, you know, hobby shops or whatever, selling, you know, whatever, arts and crafts. Every, it used to have 3 tasting rooms there because a lot of wineries, you know, they're winemakers, I should say, you know, they're very small. They don't own wineries.
Right.
They don't own property. They, you know, they lease grapes and, you know, they buy grapes and then they make it in these facilities, you know, whatever. But they would open tasting rooms. How many tasting rooms? And so there were 3 there for years. How many are there now? 55.
Wow.
You literally walk out of one into another.
That's incredible. That's incredible.
That place has changed.
Yeah.
But it still has the same beauty and everything else. Solvang, which is this kitschy town that was built way back in the, I don't know, 30s or 40s, kind of like a faux Danish town to draw tourists to the area.
Mm-hmm. Because
Central California is quite beautiful.
Yep.
Is now all been taken over by Sideways and wine. So 3-day fest, they screen the movie, I talk.
That's great.
We have wine tastings. I couldn't believe it. They had 2 buses, and on the side of the bus to the Sideways shuttle tour. And
these cool.
People got on, and they took them to these various locations. And I thought, you know, they're not really getting the real story. And another thing about the sideways, and stop me if I'm boring you, but Alaska Airlines just announced 3 new routes beginning January from San Diego, Portland, and Seattle to San Luis Obispo. San Luis Obispo is literally 50 minutes from sideways country, 50 minutes.
Huh.
So there were never any commercial flights
right
into the Central. You have, the closest north would be San Jose,
yeah,
or San Francisco, and south would be L.A. A few into Santa Barbara, but not many.
Mm-hmm.
No. And not only did they announce them, they announced it as their Wine Flies Free program, which means, and they have the same thing in Sonoma, what to fly into Santa Rosa. They know you're coming there for wine tourism. So they allow you to take a case of wine back with you for free, no baggage charge.
You're kidding me, really?
So they're the same thing now to San Luis Obispo, and just north of San Luis Obispo is another wine region that's growing as Paso Robles. But, I mean, that is all, they did their research.
Mm-hmm.
They saw that wine tourism is booming because, again, of sideways.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some people who say, well, it's going to happen anyway, but a lot of people up there just said no. I sat there, I mean, Solvang, I got up there on Friday, and Solvang, this is a kitschy town that people went to around Christmas time.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, eating Able Skeeters and buying little knickknacks. I mean, that's what it was. It was just kind of, it's kitschy. It was a joke. You know, nobody ever went there. Oh, no, it's got tasting rooms. They had a huge, big, great stomping event. What's funny is that Sideways is this buddy-buddy movie, but, you know, there's more women up there than men.
Awesome.
I mean, they go up there and they let down their hair and they go crazy. They're stomping grapes in these, you know, in these huge fermentation baths. And then, you know, you pay a certain fee.
Yeah.
And because, you know, when you get up there, you can go to various places, hitching posts, other places that are in the movie. But people want to have things to do, you know, when they get up there. And, you know, there's wine tasting, but they want to be able to, there's so many different events. So it was, I had not been up in 7 years, right?
Yep.
I couldn't believe it. It is not, a lot of people thought it would go away after the movie came out. And I want to remind people, 2004, 15 years ago, the movie came out, you know, and the Oscars were 2005. We were nominated for 5. Big deal. And all the awards that you cited, you know. And so people were starting to go up there. But they kept coming back. It not only has not gone away, it's grown.
Well,
so the area hasn't grown. It's just that the existing places up there have been
right.
co-opted or just taken over because they have more money by wineries. And they're putting in tasting rooms in Buellton, which is just this kind of deadbeat freeway town.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely changed. And if you lived in L.A., Ray, and anyone in Florida who's listening to this or wherever your show's listening mm-hmm. to, if you've been in L.A., the traffic is so horrendous.
I know.
And to just, you know, get in your car on Saturday morning and just, you know, head up the 101 within 2 hours, you know, you're seeing open space.
Yeah.
And within another half hour, you drop down, you're tasting wine. I mean, you know, it's relaxing, it's liberating, and it's, I, you know, at the risk of immodesty, Sideways has really spurred a tourism growth. I'll tell you, I live here in Del Mar, which is essentially North San Diego. Between Tijuana and Ensenada, across the border, Baja California, is only about 70 miles. It's called Valle de Guadalupe. There's
right.
now 300 wineries there.
Wow.
Between Tijuana and Ensenada, and not only that, it's one of the number one tourist destinations for San Diego. Temecula,
yep.
which is a little bit northeast of San Diego and doesn't even produce good wine, they also have over 300 wineries up there. And it's because if you don't really care all that much about, you know, what you're drinking, but you still want to have a wine tasting experience or bachelorette parties, whatever, go to Temecula because it's close. If you want to go to the San Ynez Valley, it's going to be an overnight stay. But now, in January, with Alaska Air, you could fly there from San Diego. You
mm.
could be there in 50 minutes, get in a rental car, and be inside. You can be tasting wine within another 50
That's
minutes.
Incredible. What a great trip.
All because of Sideways, they're now going to fly. And bear in mind, like the other two routes are from Seattle and Portland.
Right.
And pretty soon it'll be San Francisco, too. You'll be, those are international airports. You'll be able to fly in from anywhere in the country to Seattle or Portland,
mm-hmm.
get your connecting flight, and you can have a sideways experience.
Incredible.
Isn't that amazing that you could, I mean, I think I was sideways in, I was talking to people, it just so blew me away.
Yeah.
And it is, trust me, it is party central up there on the weekend.
I can imagine.
The only thing I could think about, Ray, was the Sun Also Rises and Pamplona.
Yeah.
You know, the bullfighting. Because people, they go to Pamplona and the whole festival they sent for Maine and, you know, the running of the bulls, and you've heard about it, of course. Mm. But it really is. Who popularized it was Ernest Hemingway and the Sun Also Rises. No one's really, I mean, Spaniards knew about it, but no, now they're coming from all over the world to go to Pamplona and watch the running of the bulls. And now bullfighting, of course, has lost its popularity, animal rights activists and other stuff in Spain. But, you know, it was popular for years. And to this day, people still flock there. And they did it because of a novel. And that's the only kind of parallel I can think of. Maybe there's some others, I'm sure, with Sideways. They are flocking this area because one day a guy, totally dead broke, wrote a novel.
It's a great story. That's a great story. Well, what about the, is there a Pinot taste off coming up? Is that the taste off?
Well, yeah, there is an event, but I unfortunately got double booked, and now I'm going to be going to Brazil instead, so I can't do the Pinot taste off. But the wine is going to get sent up there. They just, I won't be there. I'll be in Brazil, in Sao Paulo.
Right, you'll be in Sao Paulo, and you're going to promote the signature series.
The wine. Brazil, they, you know, like I said, we had sales. I mean, the wine was just released.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we and our, the head of marketing of Via Wines, which is not an American, you know, it's a Chilean winery. They, I mean, they sold in China and South Korea, Japan, Ireland, Canada, you know, blah, blah, blah. All these countries are getting all these orders. But one of the biggest orders, oddly enough, was Brazil. And so they're having these big trade events, and the beverage company is putting on, and, you know, I'm kind of the celebrity star of the show. And so maybe, you know, all the money that people think I made off the movie, I didn't make a dime. And the novel, St. Martin's Press, they didn't do any promotion for the novel, if you can believe that. So people think I got rich off the novel, try and made less than $100,000. You know, I did okay when the movie went into, you know, when the movie went into production, because they had to pay me, you know, production deal.
Right.
But, you know, trust me, I'd rather have owned a restaurant in the San Andreas Valley than me, if it was just about money. But money doesn't really matter to me. It's really more about the recognition. But the wine could do well, the musical, those things. Ultimately, I'm, you know, at that time, I was just kind of enjoying the recognition and everything else. But now it's about reclaiming my intellectual property. Sideways is a brand, and I created it.
Yeah.
And it's really, you know, I'll do anything to promote it, because I don't feel like I'm promoting, you know, something that, you know, I'm not, I'm certainly not ashamed to sell. You know, people love the characters. They find them timeless. They love the story. It's a comedy. You know, God knows in this day, we need a comedy. We need some laughter out there, you know. So when you talk about putting on the play down there and making it a wine event, I'm saying, great. I'll be the first one down there to help you make that a reality.
Yeah, you need to be down here, man. I'm telling you.
Okay.
I'll set it up for you.
Okay. I trust you, Ray.
Okay.
Hook me up with the right people.
I'm going to hook you up.
Okay, great.
Rex, you got anything else to talk about, to promote? I think we covered a lot of ground here.
Yeah, you did a great introduction. You obviously, you know, let me ramble on there. And no, really, it's just, you know, obviously The Archivist I'm excited about, because it moved
away from, me too.
You know, and that will be Blackstone in early 2020. And, you know, then, you know, obviously my wine, the musical, there's 12 incredible songs. You know, I wish we could sign off, you know, with, you know, playing No Fucking Merlot, because it's a funny song. You know, but a duet between Miles and Jack, it's really great. So that, you know, that's exciting. And, you know, and obviously my play opening in New York, and, you know, and other opportunities that I'm probably even blanking on right now. But, no, it's, you know, it's enough. It keeps me busy every day I wake up. Let's put it that way.
Well, this has been very informative. Also to the freshman writers, you know, that want to get ahead in life. They know what it's all about, you know, from an expert like you. You know, they always, you know, first thing writers do when they publish is, oh, I think it should be a movie. You know, right away,
right.
It should be a movie. And it's not that easy. Broadway's not easy. It takes a lot of money. I interview a lot of rock stars. That's main, you know, I do authors, but I do a lot of rock stars, and I've had a lot of guys try to get on Broadway, and even they, you know, it's very hard for them to afford it as well. So it's a tough gig. But once you're in, you're in.
Well, the one thing we're lucky about with Sideways Musicals is we do have the built-in brand. You
right.
know, there are a lot of movies actually going to Broadway. I mean, right now, one of the big hits is Tootsie.
Yep.
You know, and there's been many others, Groundhog Day, and we could go on and on. So that's what they're looking for, is having that brand recognition.
Yep.
You know,
exactly.
And we have that. And also, you know, Sideways, when we did the, and I saw this with the play, so this is not just, you know, speculation, is, there were a lot, and I was, when we did it at the 50-seat Ruskinger Theater, I was there every night. I didn't watch the play every night, but I was there,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it was such a rush. And I would talk to the patrons, and what I found was that many of them, it was the first play they'd seen in 5 years, and the reason was is because it was Sideways. And the same at La Jolla Playhouse, where it was a huge hit, is they weren't regular theater goers, but they came because it was Sideways. And, you know, that's the hope also with the musical and Broadway. But Sideways doesn't even have to go to Broadway to be successful, Ray. It could, you know, it could go around the world.
Sure.
You know, I was in Italy for 5 months writing an original screenplay. Everybody knew Sideways. I was in Chile writing Sideways for Chile. Everybody in the wine world, they all know Sideways.
Yep.
So wherever there's theaters and there's, you know, wine or whatever, we could be a hit, you know, because it's kind of, you know, two guys out on a, you know, 1 week before one's going to get married, you know. I mean, we could be a hit in Vegas.
Exactly.
We could literally not go to Broadway and mm-hmm. just make it in Vegas. Why
right.
not? You know, because
right.
people, it's got brand recognition.
Exactly.
Huge brand recognition. And it's tough. And for all the, you know, the aspiring writers and everybody out
yeah.
there, certainly they all have incredible opportunities that I didn't have when I was young. Because when I was young, you know, you had to get an agent. You had to get a publisher. Now you can publish your own book. You know, you had to get money to make a feature film. And
yeah.
you would literally go up there and really raise money.
Yep.
Now you can take your iPhone, go make a feature film, but it isn't going to make your screenplay any better.
Exactly.
That's the one thing that digital has not changed, is writing. This is, you know, if you really want to make it, and you know, I'd say, you know, just keep trying to find your own voice. Don't go up there and say, okay, I can do this, you know, because this is hot right now. TikTok is hot right now. So maybe I should start doing TikTok. You know, that isn't really the viewer she is. To having any success, it's finding your own individual voice. And also, number two advice, if this is what you're asking me, but I'm happy to dispense it, is it's not an avocation. You know, it's a life. And you might be lucky and you might make it in your 20s or whatever, and that might even be a curse, as it was with F. Scott Fitzgerald. But, you know, it might take a long time. And so it has to come first. It has to come over a spouse and pets and everything else, you know. I mean, if people knew what I went through when I wrote Sideways and where my life was at, most of them would have just gone out and tried to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, seriously, you know, but for me, this was it. It was, you know, it was life or death. And I think I know that sounds dramatic, but I'm going to say it that way. I think it is, you know, if you truly are an artist, you don't even have to say, okay, this is what I have to do or whatever. It'll come from inside you. You know, you bring up Stephen King. There's a man who gets up and has to write.
Mm-hmm.
He just has to write.
Right.
That's it. It comes from inside.
Yeah.
That part I can't teach. But the truth of the matter is, if you think you're going to do this in your spare time, you know, and you think that it comes after this, and I meet so many people, I've got this great idea and everything else. Then you talk to them 6 months later, well, you know, I couldn't, you know, I started to write it and I couldn't, you know, I can't listen to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a life. It's hard, you know, and yes, there can be rewards, but, you know, you may not make it, but you won't know unless you put your butt in the seat and turn on that computer and try.
Exactly.
You won't know.
Exactly.
You can sit there and fantasize all you want about it. You know, and that's fine. I've heard these stories many times. But, just, you know, show me the work. And you'll know.
Yep.
And don't be afraid. Go
yeah.
out and fail. Fail 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times. It could be your 6th one that makes it. Your 7th one. But then you really hit it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and if you're in it just to make money out of it, you can't do that. You're in it because you enjoy writing. You
that's
know?
Right. That's right, Ray. Absolutely.
You enjoy
and
writing.
The money is only going
right.
to come after the fact. And if that's what you're trying to do, I mean, I don't even like your philosophy from the beginning.
Exactly.
Not your philosophy, but that philosophy.
Right.
You're absolutely right. You do it because
enjoy it.
You believe you have something
sure.
to say. You just have a talent. You have to get got your guitar and you just have to start writing songs.
There you go. You can compare it.
That's what it is. And if you make money and you're rich, fine. Then you take someone like Nick Drake, you know, great folk singer. He never made it, died when he was 26.
Yeah.
He's more popular than ever.
Exactly.
So, you know, you might be that guy too. You know,
perfect. Perfect example. Perfect example. Rex, thank you, man, for being
thank
on the show
Rick.
Today. It's great talking to you again. Hey, when you have...
I play in Florida. I've never been there. And
I'll set it up.
Yeah, I think that'll be a blast. And you know what? We might even make money, right?
But there you go.
Well, at Playhouse, we were, we broke all records for a non-musical in their smallest theater.
Well, I got the perfect venue.
It's still a big theater, but, Sideways has that cachet. And if you say they're a big wine culture...
Tremendous.
Anyone who's into wine knows Sideways. You know that. That's not bragging. That's just a fact.
Exactly. Rex, when you have your launch, for the new book, and it's if you have a big launch or whatever, invite me. I'll be there, man.
Okay. Great.
All right.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Rex. It's
all right.
Great chatting with you. Take care, man.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
All right. We'll see you, Rex. For more information about Rex Pickett, visit www.rexpickett.com. Follow Miles and Jack beyond the first novel into the Sideways trilogy. Through successes to hardship, the story of Miles continues. Available at Amazon.com. The whole trilogy is available at Amazon. Rex's new novel, The Archivist, will be published in December or probably in 2020, is what Rex was telling us. Published by Blackstone Publishing. Very excited to hear about this new novel, and keep watching out for updates. I'll give you updates as well. And usually when you go to Amazon, it tells you it's coming and you can usually pre-order. Also go to Rex's website at www.rexpickett.com and you'll get updates about the new novel. Very special thanks to the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsom of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. It's real news. Don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of a Neglected American Family and Their Wacky Family Business. Available now at Amazon.com. You will live it. And my next book is in production, called The Rockstar Chronicles. Music fans, music enthusiasts, rock fans, you will love this. It includes 50 interviews with the great legends of music and rock and roll. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.